Welcome to this week's episode of 90s Court. Happy summer. Happy 4th of July. Hope you have all your fingers.
Hope you have all your fingers. Here at 90s Court hope that you have all of your fingers.
That should be our new slogan. 90s Court. Hope you got all your fingers.
Hope you got all your fingers, which is just really more than anything just offensive to people that don't.
So. Yeah. Take that, people who have had accidents. Oh,
like the weirdest discrimination of all time.
90s Court. Yeah, we didn't mean to.
Oh, yeah. We're 90s Court.
We're 90s Court. I'm Lisa.
I'm Andy.
What's up, guys? Hope you are here and safe and had a good 4th of July. We are actually recording on the 4th of July.
We're doing it early in the afternoon so we can get
born. Yeah. Well, actually, this is actually coming up my birthday week and then yours a few days later. So happy birthday to us.
Happy almost birthday to us. And happy we won't tell you the date birthday. Because crime. Here's the thing. It never occurred to me like not to give out birthdays until I realized I'm like every medical facility on the planet will just give like any information if you're just like, what's your birthday? And I'm just like, here it is.
Oh yeah, I got you right here.
I know. No, I'm like, Jesus, what a public piece of information to use to verify someone's identity.
This is true.
Anyways.
This is very true.
We're not here to talk about that.
No, we are not. We are here to talk 90s stuff. But first we have to get to our Patreon shoutouts.
Oh, we do we?
Yes.
Well, I, Andy Klonfelter, will be taking it here. Knuckle crack. Judge Troy, Judge, I just want to say, it does not go unnoticed that we say your name here at the beginning every episode, and we love you so very much. You are the man, and anytime you say something on a post, it's hilarious and it's amazing. But also, we got a new judge. Judge Gabriel. Hello, Gabriel. Judge Gabriel. Welcome aboard.
What's up, dude? Welcome.
By the way, coming in hot with just like, I'm the new judge. And I'm like, hey, new judge. And he's like, here's my suggestion for an episode. And I'm like, damn, all right. And it was a fucking banger immediately. So.
Yeah, are we doing that one next? We haven't discussed it.
We might not do it next. We might wait a couple just because it is a genre that we've done recently and we almost kind of want to like separate it a little bit from another one of a similar genre. To space those out a little bit. But it will be pretty soon. So I'm pretty excited for that. So also shout out to our illustrious bailiffs. Jake, my man, I know this is weird, but I still look at my clock. Like every time I see my clock, I'm just like, a person made that for me, and that's really neat.
I know, I'm looking at mine right now, actually.
Vincent, thank you for keeping Lisa's espresso game in check. Nate, it's been good. I haven't seen you in a little bit. You never call. Where are you at? Come on. Give me the calls.
True.
Jacqueline,
give me the calls.
Jacqueline, you're the sweetest. Thank you so much for all of your support and being amazing. Michael, also a really wonderful person. Thank you for following on Facebook, and I think on Instagram as well. So thank you.
Hey,
Tim and Preston, also our ride or dies. Tim, I've already talked about the fact that I saw Tim a few weeks back, and Preston, as always, I love usually when he tags me in something, like usually something 90s that I have, like that I am almost always excited about. So thank you for when you tag me in things that they're really good things almost every time. So thank
this
you.
Is true.
And of course, our lovely juror, Samantha. Thank you, Samantha.
Yay. I'm so jealous that you get to rub bodies with some of our supporters.
It's weird. It's uncomfortable for everyone involved.
But is it though? Is it?
Here's the thing. Tim lives far away. It just happened to be that they were in town like once, and so we met up. But Nate lives. Nate, I see him on a fair occasion. So
nice.
So we also like to talk about things from the 90s, some things that maybe, I don't know, maybe they're not worth a full court case, but I think these are kind of fun because usually they're the things that kind of are nuggets that sit in the back of your brain that maybe you haven't thought of in a while. Maybe some you have thought of in a while, but they're just not enough to warrant a full court case. And I'm going first this week. And this week, I'd like to start you off with a sound bite. And hopefully, ooh, it's loud enough so everyone can hear it.
Oh my gosh.
Oh All right. I don't think I can play much more of it than that. But I want to talk about Motherfucking Zombie by the Cranberries, ladies and gentlemen.
Music is not always your thing, but when you do, you come in hot, man.
It's not. And so, like, when I bring it, it's going to be a good-ass song or something, mm-hmm. because the Zombie by the Cranberries is a song that, I mean, I'd always known it's existed, since it's existed, you know, because you hear it when you're in the 90s, because it's on every station, you know, similarly to a lot of other things, like the hits and mix music and everything back in the 90s. But when I rediscovered it, and the reason that it's holds a special place to me now is actually outside of the 90s, sorry, it is still, hands down, it is the best road trip song for a bunch of belligerent fucks. For a bunch of, like, usually, like, because I would go to conferences and conventions with multiple people that usually we have a lot of energy and are pent up and we're, like, on our destination or almost there. And frequently when we would do this, we would turn on Zombie by the Cranberries before we arrived, because then we would basically throw out our voices, just fucking blasting the shit as loud as humanly possible. Because it's, like, because it's so fun to be like, yeah, in your ear. I'm not going to do it on the recording, but just usually you're like full blast, just blasting it. So so I want to firstly say thank you to Zombie, to the Cranberries, for making this song.
Yes, thank you for making this whole thing possible.
This is a single released on the 1994 album No Need to Argue, which came out a year after the previous album, which released the song Linger, which is also a banger of a song.
That's a good one.
They had a few really good ones. This, Linger, and Dreams are the three that you're probably most familiar with. They had some other songs too, but they aren't ones that would stick in your head as much. Zombie
Salvation
is a song.
Salvation was one. Salvation, the one with the clown, the video with the clown.
I was not as big of an MTV person, so I don't, or VH1 or whatever, so I didn't see the videos as much. Usually you reference videos and I'm like, yeah.
Sure, Lisa. TV.
Yeah.
Shit.
So, this song is actually, so I actually learned what it's about today. So, the Cranberries are an Irish band, or at least the singer is Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this song is actually a protest song in response to the Warrington bombings, which took place in February and March of 93.
Okay.
This happened in a place near in Warrington, which is the city near in Cheshire, England. I'm going to brutalize this, so if you're from England or the UK, I apologize.
True.
The Irish Republic Army, the IRA, which I'm sure many people are familiar with from Northern Ireland, had some, I guess you would call them terrorist situations. I mean, I guess it depends on which side you're on or what have you, but had a lot of bombings and some pretty terrible things that were going on. Back in the 90s, and I mean since then too, including these Warrington bombings, one of which was at a gas facility where there were no casualties, fortunately, but a lot of property damage. The second one was in March, where they put two small bombs inside of litter bins or garbage cans for us normal people. Sorry, Britain. But they were outside of shops and businesses. And these two bombs killed two people, and the two people were both children, a 3-year-old and a 12-year-old, and 56 others were injured. And so the song was by the Cranberries in response to the violence and everything like that as a protest, but also as a way of saying, like, hey, listen, I know there's a lot of anger right now about Irish people in general, but we're not about that. Like, but you see, it's not me. It's not my family. So the song's obviously another head hangs lowly, child is slowly taken, and the violence caused such silence. Who are we mistaken? Another mother's breaking heart is taken over. When the violence causes silence, we must be mistaken. Basically, they said, like I said, wanting to clarify, like, listen, we're with you guys. This is messed up. This is like I said, it's not a funny thing, but it's cool to have a little bit of a backstory to this song that I like to pipe out very, very loudly. And I understand why she's so passionate about it when she's singing during the part. I don't know what zombie is supposed to mean. I didn't really look into that specifically.
Interesting.
Yeah, but you see, it's not me. It's not my family. She didn't do it.
This is one of the songs I don't know any of the lyrics for. I think most people, I know the chorus. And
another
I'm just like,
head hangs lowly, child is lowly. And that's usually one of the ones where we'll just do. Because those are like kind of like Creed, those kind of songs where you just make noises and it's you're like, that sounds about right.
Yes. Yes.
And that's kind of similar to this one. So I don't know. I just wanted to bring that up because I do love Zombie. I do love the Cranberries. And it was nice to learn a little bit about it, about this song that I love so very, very, very much. So yeah, you're welcome. That's me talking about music.
That's one of those, the more you know.
The more you know.
The NBC little stars and rainbows thing, the more you know. Now you know about Zombie. I didn't know. I just knew it was like you said, one that you would probably take a few shots and do at karaoke.
It is funny to me that there's like people who are like, does Lisa even like music? And I'm like, have you listened to 90s Court? Like, I've like put her next to me and all of a sudden she looks like the fucking music queen. lover of all music.
I just get, so you're referencing No Skips and people shit on me because I don't like No
you're
Skips.
You're honest. That's
that
all
like,
you are. You're
I'm
honest about
honest.
Your feelings about it. Yeah.
And it's not me being like, this is us reviewing an album and giving it all the, you know, accolades it deserves. Yeah. It's like, do I like it? Yes or no? No.
Because I'll sit there and I'll be like, oh, this is such a, I'll like, if it's like something really reputable, I'll be like, oh, it's really nice. And Lisa's like, listen, I know that people are supposed to like this, but it fucking sucks. And I'm like, I appreciate your honesty because I'm a coward.
I'll be honest. I don't give a shit. But people are not very appreciative of that in the reviews of the show. But who cares? Moving on. Andy, my thing this week is a fun one. Are you ready?
Oh.
Are you ready? It's a Kiss, Marry, Kill.
Oh!
Yeah,
Kiss, Marry, Kill. It's Kiss, Marry, Kill with Lisa A and Andy.
But guess what? This is a very special edition. This is the 90s mom edition.
Oh no!
I have. This
at
is,
least well, they're adults, I guess, this time instead of teenagers.
Well, we'll see about that. Well, no, they are. Okay. So they're '90s moms. I have three different categories for you. Okay, we're gonna start off with '90s sitcom. How I judge them, rough moms. The rough moms category. Okay, your three choices.
The rough moms.
You'll understand what I'm saying. Okay. For option one, Roseanne from Roseanne.
Oh, okay, I see. Immediately.
Okay. Number two, Peggy Bundy from Married with Children. And because I couldn't think of anyone quite as equally as like rough as those two, I just thought she was a fun addition. Kitty from That 70s Show.
Okay, let's see. So there's Roseanne.
Roseanne, Peggy Bundy, and Kitty from That 70s Show.
I mean, Peggy Bundy is 1,000% going to be, like, just, like, because, like, of the three is the one that I would be like, oh, that's the attractive one.
Okay, yeah, I suppose. I don't know. Kitty's kind of got that, like, spunky little firecracker energy.
Yeah, I guess for some reason I always think of Kitty as being older than she is, isn't she? So,
yeah. Red.
You know, okay, so I will go... Kiss Peggy Bundy.
Kiss.
Marry Kitty.
Uh-huh.
And kill Roseanne.
Kill Roseanne. That's about how I expected it to go. No problem. Yeah. No problem.
Kitty. Kitty seems like a sweet lady, even though she does have a severe drinking problem.
Well, but also cute hair.
Yeah.
She has cute hair. But I guess it was par for the course for the 70s. Okay, round two. Are you ready? This is a fun one.
Yes.
Actually, I'm going to switch. This is round two. 90s sitcom moms. Okay. Okay. Option one, Jill Taylor from Home Improvement.
Oh, hold on. Jill Taylor.
Jill, the Jill Man Taylor.
Okay.
From Home Improvement. Option two, Carol Foster. This is Suzanne Summers' character from Step by Step.
Okay.
And round three, Amy Matthews, Corey's mom from Boy Meets World.
Okay, so these are people I'm kind of like almost like meeting for the first time in a very long time because I hardly watch these shows like at all.
Sure. Yeah, Step by Step I haven't seen since the 90s, I think. So
I will say this, Carol Foster,
mm-hmm.
that character looks like every real estate agent ever. Ever. I'm sorry.
I wish I hadn't taken a drink this of water picture, at the exact moment picture, you said that.
This picture that I'm looking at of her with her, like, posing. I don't mm-hmm. know if you see the one I'm talking about where she's got, like, a white blouse, like, with black, white and black blouse. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Gosh, because I don't know enough
almost
about them personally to know whether I would marry them, but, well, this feels rude because I don't want to be mean to anybody.
I love putting you on the spot like all right. this. My favorite thing.
So yeah, it's just like let's figure out a way to make Andy like do the thing that he is like the most uncomfortable thing in the world, which is objectify women in public.
Yeah
Wonderful. So I'm definitely gonna kiss the real estate agent, so I'm kissing okay. Carol Foster.
All right. This is tough, man. Corey's mom and the Taylor mom, that's rough.
Corey's mom has got it going on. Honestly, I think it's just exclusively because of the hair. I gotta marry Amy Matthews because
Ooh.
I cannot handle Jill Taylor's hair. It's so bad.
Yikes. See, Jill's my favorite. That's
She's got the 90s. She has the 90s hair, like, ever when you look at, like, these different bobs.
Oh, yeah. That's her jam. Okay. All right. So kiss Carol Foster.
Uh-huh.
Marry Amy Matthews. Kill Jill Taylor. Kill Taylor.
Like, I know you probably thought I was going to kill Amy Matthews and marry Jill Taylor, but it was the real estate agent and then the field. So I just had to pick one of them, and it was based on hair.
I understand. Okay, final round. This is a fun one. Are you ready?
Oh, another one. Yes.
One round left. Rugrats moms.
Oh, shit.
Dee Dee Pickles, Charlotte Pickles, and Betty.
I have a terrible joke.
Okay, what is it? What is it?
I don't know why. It was like the most savage thing ever. It's just like, and Chucky's mom and just so gravestone.
Andy! At her end. She's a new category. Chucky's mom. Chucky's mom and her category will do kiss, marry, kill, rebury.
I need everybody to understand, like, I have lost it over here at my own joke.
You're ridiculous.
Didn't even get made. Dee Dee Pickles, Charlotte Pickles. I mean, Charlotte's going to be kissed for sure because there's no way I'm marrying her. Then what was the last one? There was Dee Dee, Charlotte, and...
Betty, Phil and Lil's mom.
Oh.
Oh, you don't have to say it like that.
Betty. What's Phil and Lil's last name? I don't even...
DeVille. I had to look it up. This is tough, man.
Hmm.
Because both Betty and Dee Dee are pretty insufferable in their own ways.
Yeah. Man.
But Betty seems like she would be fun. She'd be bossy, but like...
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I'm leaning away from Dee Dee Pickles just because, like, I just can't with fucking Dee Dee. So I'm going to kiss Charlotte. I'm going to marry Betty DeVille, and I'm going to kill Dee Dee Pickles.
Damn.
I'm going to murder Dee Dee Pickles so that Chucky's best friend also doesn't have a mom.
Perfect. Even the playing field.
Just fucking knock out. Just kill all the moms. Anyways, this is on the air. I feel so great about myself as a person.
You should. You should. I'm really glad I could take you down to this level today.
Sure.
Man, I never really realized how Dee Dee's hair is like a starfish.
Yeah, I think she inspired Limp Bizkit.
Limp Bizkit.
The chocolate starfish.
Oh my gosh,
Andy. Flavored right. water.
I'm cutting you off okay. right now, sir. That all is right. enough.
All right. Well, hey, listen, everybody. It's 2:30 in the afternoon, and I'm stone cold sober, because I always am. But just so you guys know, this is just me normally.
This is just Andy doing some kiss, marry, kill. I'm glad I could I could bring this out on you. I did. I broke your spirit. And with that, we are going to take a break ourselves, and we'll be right back with results from last week's show and then move on to this week's insane court case.
Mm-hmm. Love
you ready?
Bye.
Hey, 90s Court listeners. Lisa here. I'm here to talk to you really quickly about a product that I absolutely love and I've used every single day for years and years and years. Let me hit you with a couple of scenarios. Perhaps you're miserable because your partner snores like crazy. Or maybe you're a night shift worker who can't get proper sleep during the day. Or maybe you live in a really loud and busy downtown area. there's hope for you, and it comes in the form of sleep phones from Acoustic Sheep. I'm not lying when I say I've been using them religiously for years, and they're the sole reason I'm not a crazy person suffering from insomnia. Sleep phones are just ultra-soft headphones and a headband that are extremely bed-friendly. Side sleepers can also rejoice, for you can comfortably block out the sounds of the world while getting some soothing, noise-free sleep without hurting your ears. They even have wireless Bluetooth options, so you don't get tangled up in cords overnight. I personally connect mine to my phone each night and listen to some white noise to drown out my partner's snores. I'm telling you, I've gifted them to night shift nurses, in-laws, basically anybody with ears that values a good night's sleep. They even have options now that come preloaded with binaural beats or deeply relaxing ASMR content. So you can find something that's just right for you and maybe not even have to connect to your phone at all if you don't want to. Andy and I both use these now, and we'd love to help you get some rest too. Go to sleepphones.com and use the code 90sCourt to get $10 off your order of $39 or more. That's sleepphones.com, and the code is 90sCourt. Sweet dreams.
Like it or not, we're back.
Yep. Suffer with us.
We didn't just turn the show off, unfortunately. I know you were thinking, like, I know it says that there's, like, another, like, I'm not going to speculate on how long this episode is because I don't know yet. But you're just hoping maybe it was going to be over, but it wasn't.
False. Stuck with us.
You're stuck with us. For better or for worse. I'm sorry. But good news, if you did stick around and think, like, maybe we'll get to learn the poll results and then I can turn off the episode, I've got it. I've got you covered for last week's episode. So if you don't ever want to listen to the full episodes and you just want to hear the poll results, I've got them for you. So
you're so lucky right now.
Last week, we covered Squeeze It versus Capri Sun.
That was a fun one. That was wild.
Which I thought was a blast. I honestly, we have a rich history of all either food-based ones or like shop. Basically anything that's kind of like doesn't feel like something you would review normally. Like, because like normally you'd think of like a movie or a TV show or a song, like an artist or a video game or something like that. Usually when it's more obscure things like food or drink or snacks or shops or, you know, or different things like that, that's usually those ones are the most fun to do.
Yeah.
Because we're winging it a lot. Anyways, so Squeeze It versus Capri Sun. So things started out pretty hot for Mr. Andy as Instagram polls came out. And we had a lot of votes on this one, gang. So thank you all so much for chiming in on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So Instagram came out a hot and tight one, 51% to 49% Squeeze It. So I know Lisa was like really excited about Capri Sun doing so well. She's like, "This is gonna be a blowout. I'm just gonna rake you against the coals." But IG got the hot start right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Facebook and Twitter polls closed.
They pretty much shut that down.
Facebook came out 72.5% to 27.5% Capri Sun, and Twitter was like, "Oh no, mon frere, not to be outdone." 76.6% to 23.4% Capri Sun. So, and Twitter, I think this was maybe like the second, I think we've had maybe like one other one that had more votes. One of the higher votes totals we've gotten on Twitter, in at least in a long time. So yeah, so we got a lot of votes on that. So thank you all. Apparently there was a lot of people felt very strongly about this. The people who felt strongly, it was kind of like the Weezer thing, like I love Squeeze It. I completely forgot about these. Thank you so much for reminding me. However, Capri Sun is better.
Reign supreme.
So Capri Sun destroyed Squeeze It. The end.
The end.
So, anyways, it's always fun though because I think it's Squeeze It is just was a more unique thing, but Capri Sun, it's just, you know, it's always there. It's the ever present. So,
I think there were a lot of booze hounds that were like, "Hey, yeah, hell yeah, just mix it with some alcohol." Or no, was that no? It was no. They were saying it was
the
Topa.
Booze hounds.
Topa was like the hug-a-jug.
The hug-a-jug. Yeah.
I was like, that's
which
pretty
is
brilliant.
The hug-a-jugs are dope. Like that. What it really was like, because those fucking foil things on top of the hug-a-jugs were impossible to take off.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like someone's face. Ba-dum-bum-ba-dum.
That was an incredible segue.
Thank you. If you forgot what the title of this episode was, that segue made no sense. But we're covering some interesting some Nicolas Cage films today. So if you thought these films seem really unrelated, that's why, because we thought, you know what, it's the 4th of July, and what's more American than fucking Nicolas Cage?
Nothing. Nothing is more patriotic than Nicolas Cage films.
So we decided to take Face Off, see, versus The Rock.
The Rock.
The Rock.
I have not actually seen The Rock, so this is going to be a major spoiler alert for me.
I'm saying that in Sean Connery voice, so that's probably why you didn't. That's because you haven't seen it, so you didn't know that's why I was doing that.
No, I didn't know any of these things. I'm excited to learn these things.
So luckily for me, I don't have to say anything for a while, because old Lisa Pants is going to rip somebody's face off.
Here we go. I'm ready. My body is ready. But is Nicolas Cage's body ready? Probably
it's not.
Okay, guess what? Face Off. /off. I was like, why am I having trouble finding that? /off is the movie. Budget $80 million. Box office $245.7 million. That's pretty good, because people like to see faces come off.
They do.
We've got John Travolta. We've got Nicolas Cage. We've got some other people, but we've got them, and that's what matters. Okay.
And you guys know how I feel about John Travolta.
Wait, do I? Oh, because he was in The Phenomenon?
It was literally just that I realized I don't have an opinion on him.
Auntie.
It's like that I have no opinion on him.
Listen, I do not refer to Nicolas Cage and John Travolta as their character names in this film. We've got, I'll go ahead and say them now, but from here on out, they are Travolta and Cage. Okay, so John Travolta plays FBI agent Sean Archer, and Nicolas Cage plays Caster Troy. That'll be the only time you hear me say Caster Troy and Sean Archer, because from here on out they are Travolta and Cage, and then Travolta as Cage and
Cage
as Travolta.
Because they're gonna change characters too. They're gonna change characters, aren't they?
I was having trouble with my show notes being like, okay, yes, okay, this is this person. So let's get on with the show. This movie opens up with Travolta on a carousel with a young boy, his son, and Cage is off in a field, like with a like sniper, like ready to shoot his ass. So he shoots Travolta, but it goes through his back and hits his son, and it kills his kid.
Oh, no.
And I'm just like, whoa. And then Travolta. So the whole thing about this movie with John Travolta, Nicolas Cage, is that he is a grade A scene chewer. He just is so weird and fucking weird in every scene, because he's caging it the most in this film that he ever cages it. And They just let him do this. So all the while he's like in this field about to shoot his kid, he's making these weird like open mouth faces and just being weird. Just, if you haven't seen Face Off in a long time, go back and watch it. It's so weird. It's so weird. By the way, it was directed by John Woo. Thought I should say that out loud. Okay. So now we cut to this happens. He shoots Travolta's kid and kills him. 6 years later, we come upon Nicolas Cage inside of a building. He's dressed like a priest. And he's in this giant building. And he, like, it's the wildest thing. Because, like, obviously priests are supposed to, you know, conduct themselves in a certain manner. He comes dancing around the corner, like, being weird. And there's, like, this choir, of course, just singing in the middle of this building. And Cage comes up behind one of the singers who dropped something. He puts his hands like on her ass and like whispering in her ear, and does this like weird moaning face up to the sky. And it's the most off-putting thing I've ever seen. I need therapy from that scene alone. What's up?
Yeah. No, I just agree. That's my thoughts. I agree.
It's so awful. So his crew. Oh, it's just the most amazing thing. Shortly after he like immediately after this, he gets out of a car and he's like on a runway, and he gets out of the car and he's in this like crazy long jacket with wind blowing everywhere. And his crew opens up a small box and it presents it to him, and there's like a gun inside and some pills, but also a box of Chiclets. I was like, this is like a Chiclets. Toddler's box, like a box of things that a toddler wants to keep.
A toddler box
with joints, Chiclets, and a gun. It's a really cool box. So he ends up boarding this private jet and starts coming onto the stewardess saying, "I can eat peach for hours." And
The line. I'm sorry. There is a show that was on forever that was called Cage's Kiss. And the beginning of the show would always say, "I could hear peach for hours."
It's the most upsetting. Oh, Andy, it's so gross. I mean, it's as if they said, Nicolas Cage, just be the grossest you can be. He said, aye, Captain, and he did it. But, and then he also says something like, he's going to ask the stewardess if he can send her some flowers, but then he's like, what if I let you, or like I'm going to let you suck my tongue, and then sticks his tongue out, and she just starts sucking his tongue. She's like, I hate this movie. This is the worst thing that's ever.
Why did she do, did she just want to?
We're about to find out that she's an FBI agent, like undercover, and she's on the plane, and like a chase ensues. And it is all happening on the runway. And then Travolta plays chicken. Travolta's in playing chicken with Nicolas Cage and his team that's on a jet. He's doing it in a Hummer. So it's like a Hummer versus a jet on a runway. This is, by the way, the length of the scene, that runway was like 25 miles long. Like, it was so fucking long. But it's so...
I relate to that so hard with the things I'm going to talk about in my movie.
Awesome. So. Okay, I'm glad there are a lot of just weird shit things happening here. So Nicolas Cage, like, leans out of the side of the jet and is, like, you know, shouting at John Travolta, because, you know, John Travolta's an FBI agent. He's got the stewardess, who's the undercover FBI agent, and he's holding her, and he's got her, and he just shoots her. He shoots this FBI agent and then tosses her from the jet plane, and like the jet plane hits her and her body starts rolling across the runway.
Just unnecessary violence.
I mean, like, even Jack was like, oh shit. Like, it was just so, it was so much to watch it. So shortly thereafter, this plane finally meets the end of the runway and it crashes into a hangar of apparently housing explosive windows. Everything explodes. Like, just explosions coming out of the wall here. And there's this insane gunfight that ends up with Cage supposedly dead after being blasted by, like, a jet engine or something like that. So, but wait, there's more.
And that was the end of the movie. Oh, never mind.
No, there's, trust me, I would, like, after the scene,
kidding.
I was like.
I know that's not the end. I was being funny.
Well, no, but I wanted to know, I was like, how long is this movie? It was like, it was over 2 hours long. I was like, are you fucking serious? Please? Mm-hmm. Why is every movie of mine over 2 hours long? But anyway. They find a zip drive file from the plane wreckage that shows, for some reason, that there's a bomb that Cage planted, that he and his brother planted, at some location. But his brother, who was there, is not talking to the FBI agents. He won't. And so he thinks that his brother's dead. But wait, there's more. Cage is not dead. They're keeping him alive. And one of the FBI agents puts out a cigarette on his, like, unconscious arm. I was like, that's so weirdly aggressive for no reason. So they have Travolta coming into this area where Cage is being held, and Travolta's like, oh, you guys are keeping him alive. And they're like, we have to, because we found there's this bomb, we gotta get out with you. He was not only talked to his brother. So one of the FBI agents lost an ear in this gunfight on the runway. And so they're 3D printing an ear in this laboratory, and they're like, hey, you know how we can get his brother to talk? Is if we take his face off of him and put it on your body and take your face off and put it in water, I guess.
Is it rough that, like, I know the premise of this film, and yet even hearing about this as you're telling me still hurts me.
It's so cringy. Like, why are you the way that you are? Why is this happening? Why is this film happening on purpose to us? Why would you do this? So they're suggesting changing fucking faces to get his brother to talk to him. Like, his brother wouldn't notice that things are totally different. Well, there's this disgusting scene where they're transferring the faces in the lab, and it's actually surprisingly tastefully done. And I think I read on trivia that it was because Nicolas Cage was like, I don't want to see any of this graphic shit. So he, you know, surprisingly, he has some, you know, modicum of, like, morality somewhere inside of him that he didn't want to be a part of that. But he starts freaking out when woken up, because now Travolta is now Nicolas Cage's character. Caster Johns, what was his name? Caster Wheels.
Caster Magoo.
Caster Wheels.
Caster Troy.
Caster Troy, thank you. So now he's freaking out and he's totally losing it. But now they're like, hey, get it together, asshole, because you only have 6 days to get this shit taken care of with his brother. You have to go talk to him. And it's this most insane, Andy, it's so weird. So his brother's in prison. in LA, and so they go and put him in the prison too, and like they're talking, so he's in there, and the brother's like mm-hmm. a little skeptical of him, being like, you look like my brother, but like you're acting weird, and
this,
go ahead.
Okay.
Just, what?
Lisa, picture you, like, me coming and talking to you and being like, I don't know, like, is this actually, like, just thinking, like, is this fucking Android Andy? Like, I mean, like, what reason would you have to doubt that that's
who it is? I love that this is where people's heads go. For some of them, it's like, you're walking not like my brother, who was just in a crazy plane accident. I thought he was dead. But now I don't think that you're him at all.
Yeah, it would be like, man, it's weird that my brother, like, I was like, man, are you okay? It seems like you've gotten really fucked up or something like that, versus like, I wonder if you're really you.
Correct. And then also, there are no scars anywhere around the perimeter of the face. So it's just like, this was a really good doctor. This doctor was incredible. It's
good thing they had the exact same body types and everything, too.
Exactly. They did use a microchip or something like that to change the vocal tenor of each person. So that, sure. that was, okay. that was, yeah, good. So there's that. So they're in prison, and he's able to get his brother to be like he gets him to say, yeah, oh, the bombs in the LA Convention Center. He's like, psych, gotcha, bitch. And it's just the most crazy thing. And let's see, where am I in my notes? So all the while, Nicolas Cage's character woke up in the hospital and made the doctor put John Travolta's face on him. And then he set them all on fire, killed them, and left.
Did he get him to install the voice chip on him, too?
I'm sure. Sounds like it. They never discussed that. It just happened like that.
So the concept is that Nicolas Cage is just like a hamburger face, just lying there with no face. Was he a hamburger face?
He was a hamburger face. They don't show it. I think they showed like the side like of it at some point. Okay. Yeah, he was in wraps and they took it off. And then there's one scene where I think you can see just the ever so slightest side of it. But then that was it. Again, tastefully done because Nicolas Cage is somehow respectable. So Nicolas Cage's character, I'm a little confused now, even in my notes. Nicolas Cage as John Travolta. Yes, visits Travolta as Cage in prison. So now he sees him. He's just like, oh, shit, you are me now, and I'm you now. And they're like, And so this is where it gets fun, because each actor is pretending to eat shit like the other actor. And it's really amazing because, like, they are pretending to be – when John Travolta pretends to act like Nicolas Cage, it's really funny. And I have to pause and tell a story real quick, okay? I remember – this made me think of the one time in Halloween in high school, my best friend Kim and I went as each other for Halloween. That's the worst idea you can have.
Have them accentuate my worst attributes.
Yes, like griping about like, I love him, I hate him, I love him, I hate him, and just other stupid petty shit, like things that you know about yourself, but you don't want someone to...
I feel like dying all the time. Like, yeah. Excuse me?
Like I'm in love with my best friend. Wah! You know, or you're like your male best friend or something like that. Just fun, like super not okay. And so to see two actors do it is just like, was Nicolas Cage offended at how shitty Travolta was pretending to be as Cage and vice versa? So anyway, moral of the story, don't ever go as your friend for anything if you want to stay friends with that person, including in a film. Let's move on. So now Cage is Travolta, and he's in Travolta being the FBI agent, he's in his home, and it's getting real fucky because he's starting to get like doing these weird movements at his daughter and like little faces at Travolta's daughter, but now supposed to be, oh, it's just so upsetting. And so, but then Nicolas Cage as Travolta goes and defuses the bomb in the convention center and is hailed a hero. But then he goes and bangs Travolta's wife.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And
what the wait, so this is the good guy?
This is the bad guy. This is Nicolas Cage, the bad guy, as Travolta is in Travolta's home banging his wife.
So who defused the bomb though?
Nicolas Cage as Travolta.
Okay. Wait, so the bad guy defused the bomb? Pretending to be the good guy?
Yes.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you why. I don't remember the incest. But I think it's all coming around. It's all coming around. I think because there's more about each other than it is about blowing up other people. But I could be totally wrong. So, where am I on my notes? So then he goes and bangs Travolta's wife. Like I said, while Travolta is trying to figure out a way to get out of prison, because he's like, so now he realizes that now that his face is no longer safe, my safe face is not safe anymore. The bad guy has it. He's like, I got to get out. How am I going to convince everyone? So insert another gunfight scene in prison. But this time he escapes and jumps in the water outside of the prison and then heads back to LA. It's a crazy scene. So Travolta, the good guy, as Cage, the bad guy, heads to Cage's headquarters, pretending to be him, and he meets this woman named Sasha, who is the drug kingpin's sister. And he learns that Nicolas Cage's character had a child with him, who reminds him of his dead son from the beginning of the movie. And then he's just like, oh, Michael, and is like hugging this child. He's like, we gotta protect him. And then a major raid of the house starts. I know, Andy, I know. And a major raid of this, like, drug pen house starts. They're like, everybody gets shot like 1,000 times, including several of Travolta's FBI teammates. A lot of them get shot and killed. So the next day, Travolta's boss is back at headquarters at the FBI and blames it all on him. But, of course, this is Nicolas Cage as Travolta. The bad guy is the good guy.
Okay. So is this something like, is this like The Departed where like there was only like one person that knew about this face transplant thing? And so like everybody else doesn't know that this happened?
I'd never saw The Departed, so I can't say, but
okay, but similarly, like there's only like one or two people like that knew about this and apparently they're dead or something.
The only people that knew are the doctors and they are dead.
The doctor, why would they? Sorry.
Because remember,
I was wanting to argue about the logistics of a movie about people where take their faces off and swap them with each other. I have no idea what is wrong with me.
There's continue. That's like arguing with a toddler. There's no reason to it. There's no reason to do it. Don't do it. So, yeah. So the FBI agent is blaming him and just being like, it's your fault that everyone died. And then Nicolas Cage of Travolta is like, fuck you, and karate chops him and then kills him and makes it look like a heart attack. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, he's just like, hey, call the ambulance. There's a heart attack in here. So as a congratulations on the death of this guy, Nicolas Cage as Travolta gets promoted to the acting FBI director.
Just the natural next step.
The natural next step. He's just like, well, now we got to make the funeral arrangements for this FBI director. So then Travolta John Travolta as Cage finds his wife. And like, so finds his actual wife and is just like, hey, I'm not Nicolas Cage. I'm your husband. Go get the blood of this guy to verify. And then she does. LOL. She's like, she stabs him in the middle of the night with a little pin. She has a pin that has a little like knife in it and stabs his ass in the arm. Nicolas Cage as Travolta is asleep. And he's just like, oh, and just goes back to sleep. I was like, this is totally normal stuff. But I failed to say that John Travolta's wife in this movie is a doctor. And she has the means and the access to get to stuff like this. And so the only reason she believes him is because he starts, whenever Travolta as Cage comes into this lab where his wife is, or comes into their house, he's like telling her things that only the two of them would know. And she was just like, oh shit, you might be right. Okay. And she tests this blood. She's like, and for some reason, the thing is like, yeah, Castor Troy for sure. 100%. You know, she's like, oh shit. So, let's see. She tests his blood, confirms that that's the case. And then she alerts her husband as Cage. So Travolta as Cage, that Cage as Travolta will be easy to attack at the funeral for the director that was killed. So then in this insane John Woo moment, doves and gunfire inside of this Catholic church ensues, and it's this huge funeral, and it's just insane. And this is epic, awful fight that leads to Cage as Travolta, so bad guy's good guy, taking Travolta's daughter in the movie hostage, but then she stabs him in the leg with a butterfly knife, and it's beautiful. Nice. And yeah, and so also at some point to prevent Travolta's wife, I think her name was Eve, from being shot. Sasha, Nicolas Cage's woman that had the baby with him, she takes a bullet for Travolta's wife, but then she dies, but not before asking Travolta as Cage to make sure that their son is taken care of. And so And then in this absolutely insane stunt scene happens where Cage and Travolta are on the speedboat and crashing and speeding through everything. And they land on the water and Travolta and Cage have this like crazy fight. And then he impales Cage as Travolta with a spear gun. It was like this crazy harpoon. It's the wildest thing. And then they get the face surgery reversed one last time. And then real Travolta goes home to his family and is like, hey, I'm home. It's actually me this time. Also, there's this random kid that you've never met before and he's part of our family now. The end.
So I didn't chime in very much during that, and it was because just, I mean,
it was like the Rubik's like Cube
nothing,
of reviews.
Nothing that you said was going to be wilder than the next thing you were going to say.
Correct.
So I just like figured, I was like, I'll just wait till it ends.
Yes.
That like I feel, I know I've seen this movie. Mm-hmm. It's been so long, but just I think it's hearing you summarize it in words makes it so much more fucking insane.
It's so wild. I okay, one thing I did not mention that I need to is that I don't think I ever saw Face Off. Okay, I don't think I ever saw it prior to this time. John Travolta's character throughout the whole movie would like take his hand and just swipe it down other people's faces that he loves. Like just take it and rub it down. Take it and rub it down someone's face. It's like, that's fucking weird. And then Jack lovingly reminded me that when I lived in Seattle, I would do that to all of my friends all of the time. He was just like,
you just moved your hand down people's faces.
Yes.
Like to caress their cheek.
Yes. I would just down their face all the time. He was like, you did that. And you never saw Face Off. I was like, I never saw Face Off. And he was like,
wow.
You were doing the Face Off move without doing the Face Off move. And it's so creepy because once you get keyed in on it, that's all
you're
Travolta's
character.
You're just
a real life sociopath.
Does. I'm just a real life fucking weird John Travolta. So that was John Travolta's character's thing this whole movie. So a little bit of trivia. This is funny. Travolta and Cage spent 2 weeks together before filming to learn how to act like each other. So that makes sense because you have to, you know, mimic the other person so well. Travolta asked the writers if they were making fun of him because there was one line at some point where Nicolas Cage's character said something about his ridiculous chin. But then they said that Cage's character was such a narcissist that he would hate having someone else's face. So,
true.
Yeah, Schwarzenegger and Stallone were originally considered for the roles.
What?
Like, can you imagine how shitty that
would
have been?
Oh my god, it would have been so bad. It would have been such a different movie. Like, not
so
serious
bad.
At all.
Not even, well, there was not much. The acting was so bad. It was so bad.
Hey, what are you doing with my body? I can't do his voice.
Good. That was good. I don't even know who you were trying to do then. That was perfect.
Good.
But
crushed
so
it.
In the final piece of trivia, the first real life face transplant happened in 2012 to someone who had accidentally shot himself in the face with a shotgun. Coincidentally, the year that Face Off came out.
So that many years later, he finally got it, like 15 years after the movie came out.
15 years later, yeah.
After he shot his face off.
When did this come? This was, 97.
This is 97. And so in 2012, 15 years after he shot his face off, he got the surgery.
Yeah.
Fucking wild. Okay.
That's pretty wild. So that's Face Off, you guys. Face /
Face
Off. That's Face Off, I guess.
Yeah, Travolta / Cage in Face / Off.
I'm so glad that is over.
So let me tell you guys about a movie that, even though apparently Face Off got rave reviews on fucking Rotten Tomatoes, which
I was surprised.
I didn't rewatch this one, so I can't say for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock is a good fucking movie, and I would have told you that before I watched it, and I would tell you that after I watched it. It is more absurd than I remember it being, but it's still a pretty good film.
Okay. I'm into it.
The Rock featuring, and I'll just list, like, there's a ton of characters that you'll see. Like, John C. McGinley's in this. He plays a character. And John C. McGinley is Dr. Cox from Scrubs. And anytime I spot him in something, because he never had, like, huge roles in most stuff, but every time I do see him in something, I'm so happy because I love him in Scrubs. But the main character is obviously Ed Harris, who is the main quote-unquote bad guy, Brigadier General Francis Hummel, Nicholas Goodspeed, played by Nicolas Cage, which I will say, dope character name, by the way.
So, so good, but that was hard for him.
Dr. Goodspeed, and John Mason, played by Sean Connery. So, this is a 1996 action film by I don't know why I would think to trivia you on this, because you just won't know the answer. By Michael Bay.
Bayo.
So, Bayo. 2 hours and 16 minutes, actually longer than your film.
Oof, I'm sorry.
Yeah, budget $75 million, box office $335.1 million.
Oh, shit. Blew mine out of water.
I mean, that's the, like, I mean, when you put Sean Connery, Ed Harris, and Nicolas Cage on a poster, you're going to sell some fucking tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So, beginning of the movie, cut to a montage with background music of Ed Harris being very serious, and clearly something super fucked up happened. Like, it's showing, like, flashbacks to these different scenes of him being kind of, like, he's a very respected general. And it's a very short, like, I will say this, it's a montage, but it's not a very long montage. It's like a couple minutes just of us being like, here's the point, is that Ed Harris is upset about something and wants to avenge some people. Clearly,
yeah.
Some sort of injustice happened. So he's clearly Ed Harris is clearly a very experienced and brilliant military commander, and has a large force of skilled soldiers who, as a result of him being angry, like the first scene is him and these people very expertly breaking into a chemical weapon facility.
Cool.
And stealing some super deadly gas rockets filled with VX gas, which will eat through like any suit. Like, a teaspoon of it will kill, like, 1,000 people. Like, it's just this horribly, horrible fucking gas. And they're like, we got it on rockets. so they take that. And then they go to Alcatraz and take over the facility.
Neat.
Which consisted of, like, and that's the thing, is it's just they went to this thing. They broke into the facility, came out. And that's the thing is, I will say this, the action sequences in this film were very good. That is Michael Bay. You know, for all of his shortcomings and the fact that he spends so much, that's basically most movies is just that. I think it's that there were some other writers on this that made an interesting storyline and everything too.
Okay.
And the fact that there were very good actors in this that made up for the fact that all Michael Bay cares about is action sequences. They have 15 of those gas rockets on Alcatraz.
Okay.
And they're pointed at San Francisco.
Take that, SF.
Yeah, so they're going to fuck up San Francisco, and they're pointing them at San Francisco and call the U.S. government, like, hey, is this U.S. government? And they're like, yeah, this is U.S. government. And he's like, okay, well, we're going to fuck up San Francisco unless you give us $100 million. And so this is Ed Harris, though. Ed Harris, in this whole thing, it's very clear he's a very respectable, very professional, like, brigadier general. Evidently, he is doing this because of 83 soldiers, and he explains kind of the plot of why he, like, originally felt scathed and like, oh, fuck this, you guys did some fucked up shit, because there were these people, there were these black op missions that the U.S. government, like, just brushed under the rug, didn't give a military burial, and didn't pay their families, like, compensation for the fact that they died.
Okay.
Basically just, like, didn't just hit, so you're like, oh, like, that's a pretty good reason to be pissed. And so he's like, so he wants 83 million of the 100 million to go to the families, like 1 million to each of their families, and then the 17 remaining million to go to him and his crew.
Okay.
Basically. So, meanwhile, while this whole thing is going on, we see our boy Nicolas Cage, who is apparently top tier in his field with chemical weapons. Lucky, which I guess it's not lucky. It's just, I mean, that's the reason he's involved in the movie. So at the beginning, he's taking out this, they like, hey, we got this package that arrived in the mail. And so they put him and this other guy in this like cage, like this glass containment thing. And they open it up and it sprays out this gas that's eating through the suit. And meanwhile, there's a bomb at the same time. And so we see Nicolas Cage calm under pressure as his suit is being eaten by this poison, defusing the bomb with 2 seconds left. And then they spray the water on. The water wasn't working, and they get the water sprayed on them, and so they end up surviving and living. So we're like, oh, Stanley Goodspeed. He's a very good doctor, and also good at defusing bombs. It's a weird that he's good at both of those. Apparently, he works for the FBI. So he's an FBI agent, but he's basically just in, like, chemical warfare and stuff like that. So he's not exactly, like, a shoot-em-up FBI agent.
Okay.
Or a field agent. So the government's like, okay, well, we need a guy who's really good with chemical stuff. So they call Stanley Goodspeed. And they're like, hey, you're coming to fucking Alcatraz. And he's like, all right. And then they're also like, hey, Alcatraz is a fucking crazy place to break into. And there's no former guards or wardens left alive. And they're like, wait, not him. And they're like, yes, him. And so they cut to a scene of, they're like, the only person to ever escape Alcatraz. And they're like, but I thought nobody escaped. They're like, well, we'd like you to think that. And so they show long-haired Sean Connery getting locked out of this, like, super secret prison. And so everything had just been happening really quickly. So all that stuff that I just explained, like a lot of major plot points, like I skipped over a lot too, happened in maybe like 15 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
They're like, hey, we've covered like a fuck ton of story in like a very short period of time. And then Michael Bay's like, let's take our time with the next part. So so this next part is we find out Sean Connery's a real rascal.
Okay.
So they're going to cut a deal for him to help break into the rock or whatever. And when I say 15 minutes, that's exaggerating. But it wasn't super long. It wasn't long for how much was covered in that portion of time. The portion of time with Sean Connery, they take him out of jail and them trying to negotiate and get him to agree to go on this mission was entirely too long. Like, just they spent so long on the whole period of time between Sean Connery getting out of prison and then them trying to break him. Get him to go on the deal. So, he keeps doing like sneaky shit though because he's like a very accomplished dude. One second.
Okay.
And apparently there's this dickhead FBI agent who's there, who's like the head of the department or whatever, and they have some beef, him and Sean Connery. So it's clear that, like, he is, more than anything, just doesn't want to deal with this guy because he knows he's a snake and a piece of shit. And so there's a whole bunch of action sequences between the period of time when they try and convince him that, yeah, we're going to pardon you if you do all of this stuff, to the point where they actually physically get him to do it, which that whole scene probably was about four times. That whole thing was about four times longer than the entire first part where we set up the entire story
of
fucking action sequences of Sean Connery and these other guys, including a super long, like, going downhill San Francisco in a Humvee, just breaking him in a Humvee, just breaking everything. Explosions everywhere.
Sounds awesome.
John and Nicolas Cage, while the police are chasing him, Nicolas Cage is in a fucking Lamborghini.
Of course. Oh my gosh.
Fucking chasing him. It's the most stereotypical chase scene you would ever imagine, though. Like almost hit an old lady crossing the road. Just explosions everywhere. Fire, like an electric pole going down. Like all the cop cars blowing up. Like FBI, I'm taking this vehicle, and you know, just all that stuff. So, and they finally, we find out that he also has a daughter, Sean Connery, and so this all was basically he just wanted to meet his daughter and say hi.
Hey,
he's been
what's
in prison
up,
this whole time. And then they come and they get him and take him back, and he's like, "All right, fine, I'll do it." And so I blinked, and all of a sudden they're like, "Oh, we've made it to the part where we're breaking into the rock now," because they were like, "Now that we've got Sean Connery, we don't need to worry about any of that stupid plot of like what the plan was to actually break in or anything. Let's just get in there.
Let's just do it."
So, I will say though, the reason that I think that I keep making this point about how they rush through all this other stuff and then put so much time on that was because for a 1996 film, the backstory of Ed Harris and his reasons for doing what he did was actually pretty good. Considering like most 96 film would be like, it's a bad guy, or have like a really obvious like thing. But I mean, it's kind of one of those gray areas where it's like, yeah, he's doing some really fucked up shit here, and he's a very complex individual, Ed Harris's character.
Okay. He's
because
just
obviously
misunderstood.
He's,
yeah.
Exactly. Like he's just kind of pushed to the wrong, and he's just doing a bad thing, basically. Sean Connery and Nick Cage, so they basically go on this, they take this group of people, like a bunch of Navy people, and they break into the facility. They go underground, like underneath into the sewers.
Cool.
And Sean Connery knows all the shit, so he shows his worth pretty easily, and he gets them through a bunch of different secrets and shows them the way. And then, unfortunately, the soldiers who took the rock, the guys that are with Ed Harris, are way more dope than the guys that came with Sean Connery and Nick Cage. as there is a scene where they go up this, they are exiting the tunnel system and going up, and there's a like a trigger, that alarm that goes off, and they didn't realize it, and they get up there, and all the troops from that the U.S. government sent have the low ground, and all the guys with Ed Harris have the high ground. Something falls, like there's this huge, long, epic standoff where Ed Harris is like shouting at them to lower their weapons because he clearly doesn't want to kill anybody, right? Because even taking over the rock, he didn't kill anyone. He just fucking like tranked them. And so there's this long speech, and then something falls, and people start firing, and they end up just wiping out everyone.
Damn.
Except Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery, who are still down in the sewers. So they think that they just killed everybody, and the U.S. government's like, well, fuck me. So it seems like all is lost, because Sean Connery's just like, all right, well, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. But Nick Cage, he feels like he likes Nick Cage, because Nick Cage clearly is not like a government fuck like the rest of them. And so Sean Connery, once he realizes like the stakes of what's happening, he's like, all right, fine, I'll help. And so thank God he did, because Nicolas Cage would have been fucked instantly. And we find out in the meantime that Sean Connery's character wasn't in prison for so long because he was like a really bad guy. He ended up stumbling upon some government secrets that were too important to get out. Like people couldn't let that information get out.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've just kept him in prison since like the 60s, without trial. So, and then they end up taking out 12 of the 15 rockets. They take out these chips. And so there's only 3 of the rockets left. And listen, I'm going to tell you about this movie. I don't claim to know everything about Alcatraz.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently there's a lot. They at least are insinuating that there's just a whole lot of like secret tunnels and caves and like mine carts and a lot of different shit. Just like a lot of Indiana Jones shit happening. Yeah, exactly. It is so Indiana Jones underneath Alcatraz in this film. So I'm not saying that it couldn't be real. I'm just saying that I think they might have taken some liberties on what's going on.
Yeah.
So, and meanwhile, like I said, there'd been some hostages that they'd taken, because all the people that were touring the facility at the time, they'd taken as a hostage and locked up in the cages. And so Ed Harris and his team finally realize, oh, there's people still here. So they pull out a hostage and basically are saying like, I'm going to kill him if you guys don't come out. So Sean Connery goes to turn himself in to give Nick Cage a chance to go find the remaining missiles and take him out. And so he takes out and destroys one more guidance chip before he gets captured by some soldiers. They both get put into cages and locked up. And in the meantime, we find out that the government is going to fucking bomb the island with thermite plasma, which is the only thing that would wipe out the toxin that they have in the missiles.
Okay.
Basically as a backup plan, because it seems like things aren't going to work out with Nick Cage. But in the process of doing that, they were going to kill all of the people on the island, including all of the civilians.
Cool. Take that, losers.
Yeah. So sorry about you. Fortunately, Sean Connery ends up getting them out of their cells. They got locked up when they got captured, and they end up going together. Sean Connery sticks around and helps Nicolas Cage. There's a whole lot of insane series of things that happen. One of the rockets gets launched, and we learn that Ed Harris is not a psychopath. As the rocket, he's like, because all he wants is the fucking money to give to the soldiers and everything. And the rocket is like just about to hit 49er Stadium, where there's a game going on. And then he at the last second like types in a code, and it goes off and flies into the ocean. And that was one of the 2 remaining rockets that were left.
Okay.
And so there's just one remaining rocket. The rest of the crew with Ed Harris is not okay with that. For some reason, they're just like, we just really want to fuck people up. And so they end up all turning on each other in this Mexican standoff situation. And then Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery take advantage of the situation and find out from Ed Harris where the last rocket is. Nick Cage gets to the last rocket, which is up at a light tower. One of the remaining soldiers like finds Nick Cage, and Nick Cage is hiding behind the rocket, and he's like going to stab him, and he's And then Nick Cage says, "You know that song by Elton John?" He's like, "What song by Elton John?" He's like, "Rocket Man."
Oh boy.
And the guy's like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Well, you're the Rocket Man." And then he pushes the button to off the rocket, and the rocket goes flying because the guy was standing in front of it, and he goes flying off. But he'd already taken all of the bad stuff out of the rocket, so it just went into the ocean and detonated.
That's a pretty good pun to get to use. I mean, can you imagine being that punny at the end of someone's life? Like,
just to die by such a ridiculous pun.
I'd be so annoyed if I went out with a pun. So annoyed.
I know, it'd be sad, but I guess you wouldn't be there to be mad about it. So probably the raddest thing ever, though, is in these things, there's like a series of these little tiny green balls, these glass balls that have the poison in them. In each rocket, there's like dozens of them. And so one of them had fallen off at some point, and Nicolas Cage was just carrying it around loose in his hand because he was just in the middle of getting shot at. So he had this. And so later on, he's going to get killed by this guy who's like got him, and he's like going to like drive a knife in his heart or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so he just shoves this ball in the guy's mouth and then crushes it with his hands. And so this fucking toxin just destroys this dude. And then Nick Cage, knowing that this toxin is going to kill him, has this huge needle filled with this stuff that's like an antitoxin, I guess, that you're supposed to take if you're exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
So then he does that, kills the guy, and then immediately jabs himself in the heart.
Oh my gosh.
With the thing.
So aggressive.
Yeah. So that was rad. And so immediately following that is the scene that everybody thinks of when they think of The Rock. Because they hear that, like, the government's coming with the thermite plasma and they're going to destroy it. So he grabs these two flares out of his vest because that was what was supposed to be the signal, is if they saw those two green flares that they're supposed to not bomb the island because basically that it's been decommissioned and there's no threat anymore.
Okay.
So he crawls out after he just injected himself in the heart with this fucking antitoxin and kind of is on his knees on the island holding up these two lit flares like up in the air, and as you see the jets coming in and just like are about to drop the bomb and then flying right over his head.
Oh, that's cool.
Over Alcatraz. So yeah, it's a scene. If you saw it, you would recognize it. So they live, and Nick Cage tells the government that Sean Connery's dead, and he helps him so he can escape. And then Sean Connery tells Nick Cage where he hid this canister of microfilm that apparently had all of America's secrets on it. And it was in some little church in Kansas. Shout out to Lisa.
No, and never so shout out to Kansas, Lisa. No.
And so the last scene of the movie is Nick Cage and his new wife, which we didn't explore that subplot. and he's looking at this microfilm and he's like, "Honey, want to know who really killed JFK?"
Oh, boy.
End of film. Fucking credits.
Oh my gosh. Boo.
Anyways. So that was The Rock. Trivia. Sir Sean Connery insisted the producers build a cabin for him on Alcatraz as he didn't want to travel from the mainland to the island every day. And they did. So
wow.
He just had a fucking cabin on Alcatraz. The premiere of the movie was held in the prison recreation yard on Alcatraz.
That's pretty cool.
Nicolas Cage's character never swore, and that was his idea, and so he would often say things like "gee whiz" in place of like where they actually like had curses written for him. He instead changed them.
Wow.
Let's see. Michael Bay's idea for a sequel involved a now married Goodspeed in possession of the microfilm evidence, who finds himself pursued by the government, and with nowhere else to turn, he's forced to ask Mason for help. Fortunately, that film was never made. The studio wanted this movie shot in Los Angeles with only a handful of exteriors of Alcatraz and San Francisco to complete the illusion. But director Michael Bay refused, telling them, quote, "I gotta shoot on this island because this island is so fucking bitchin'."
That's a really good way to put it. So fucking bitchin'. He's right.
I'm so glad that a professional adult said that.
Professional adult.
Yeah. Okay, so there were tensions between Michael Bay and Walt Disney Studios executives who were supervising the production. Apparently they had their hands in this. I didn't realize that. On the commentary track for the Criterion Collection DVD, Bay recalls a time when he was preparing to leave the set for a meeting with the execs and was approached by Sean Connery in golfing attire. And Connery, who also produced this movie, asked Bay where he was going. And when Bay explained that he had a meeting with the executives, Connery asked if he could accompany him. Bay complied, and when Bay arrived in the conference room with the executives ready to, you know, like, chew him out, their jaws dropped when they saw Sean Connery behind him. And according to Bay, Connery then stood up for him and insisted he was doing a good job and they should leave him alone.
Wow.
So,
Papa Connery.
So I've talked too long. Those are the words I have to say.
You talk too long. Movies always go long, man.
The Rock.
The little green the bubbles. Rock. Yeah, remember the that rock. Scene of was it Nicolas Cage diving for that green ball? Wasn't that?
Yes, that's it.
Yeah.
That was the green ball, the lone green ball that he later on put in the guy's mouth and booped it.
Boop.
He booped his mouth and the glass thing broke.
Oh my gosh, that's boop. So fucked up. Boop. Wow. So Nicolas Cage, America, Nicolas Cage. That's our show, guys. Oh my gosh, Face Off versus The Rock. Jeez Louise. There were some good Nicolas Cage films in the 90s. Con Air, these two. What was the other one? I threw out a bunch of options to you for this.
Yeah, there's a lot. Nick Cage has made he's known for nothing if not quantity.
This is true. Not quality, just quantity. So let's take this. Let's wrap this show up. All right. You know where to find us. We are on Facebook and Twitter at 90s Court, 90s.court on Instagram. If you'd like to support the show and get a shout out and get some stickers and other cool stuff, we are on patreon.com/90s court. We, of course, have a merch store where you can get our favorite mm-hmm. t-shirts, mugs, tote bags. I think even pillows and phone cases. I don't remember. teepublic.com/user/the90s court. And as always, if you would be so kind on our birthday week to give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and Podchaser, that would make us so very, very happy.
I think the hosts are great.
That would be awesome.
I think they're terrific. Happy birthday, Lisa and Andy.
That's perfect. And hey,
that's you. That could be you.
That could be you, but you playing. That could be us.
But you playing.
But you playing. I believe we are taking a week off as well.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we're going to take a week off because I'm going to be traveling for a while this next weekend. Mm-hmm. So we'll be back, not this next week, but the one after that with a new episode. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be the bee's knees, you guys. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Any parting remarks, Mr. Claude Felter?
I love this show.
It is a really fun show to do. I always love getting to talk to people about it. And I also love, like, I don't go back and listen to them very often, basically ever. But when I do drop in, I was like, that was fun. I enjoy it. So not to toot our own horn, but I like it too. Have a good week, everyone. We'll see you on the other side.
Stay rad.